This is a podcast recorded at CB Expo, Cannabis Business Expo and Conference, on September 16, 2023 in Dortmund, Germany. At the main stage, Dr. Bernd Wurs, Carmen Doran, Pavel Kubu, Tom Pettit, and Hannah Lushchenko. Moderated by Ben Stevens. Discuss the following topic: cannabis reform throughout the globe, where are we now, and where are we heading? Language, English. Enjoy your podcast listening.
Thanks for joining us. Good afternoon. I hope you're all having a lovely time at the conference. I hope you're all meeting very interesting people, as I am. Thanks very much to the CB Expo for inviting me to speak. Thank you for putting me with such a great panel. Today we'll be trying to zoom out a little in this panel. We've already focused quite heavily and in depth in Germany today, so I want to take a bit of a more macro look at the different ideas behind reform across the globe. I want to examine which one's working, which ones need more work, and how these are all affecting each other. I'll be the moderator. I'm Ben Stevens. I'm the editor of Business of Cannabis. I'm sure you can all intro yourselves better than I can, so I'll open it to the panel.
Okay, so should I start? Okay, thank you very much. My name is Bernd Werse. I'm a social scientist, and I think I'm one of the very few scientists here on this event. I'm doing research on drug-related issues, mainly surveys on different aspects of legal and illicit and illicit drug use for more than 20 years now, and cannabis has always been a focus of our research, starting with my PhD thesis, where I wrote about cannabis in youth culture, but also doing many other surveys. I'm also involved in the Global Cannabis Cultivation Research Consortium, and we're just about to publish some new results about illicit cannabis cultivation in different countries. So, yeah, and that's it for the moment. Thanks.
All right. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Carmen Doran. I'm the CEO of Helios Therapeutics. We are a medicines company. We are based in New Zealand, but we're definitely a global company with people in our team from all over the world, out of cannabis industries and out of pharmaceutical industries. I was thinking about how to introduce myself today, and I thought rather than running through the standard, I'd give you a few insights into me and how I ended up here, and that will give you a few insights into what we're doing at Helios as well. So firstly, I'm not a scientist, however, I am an engineer. So I'm a biomedical engineer by background. I love working out how things work, and for me, I'm really excited to explore how the endocannabinoid system works and how we can do research in that space in New Zealand. Helios is New Zealand's largest producer of medicinal cannabis. We are focused on extracts and first got our GMP license back in 2021. So we've been in market in New Zealand for 2 years, a market which is growing rapidly, which we'll talk about a little bit later. So I'm being able to bring some of my experience as an engineer, but also having worked in global pharmaceuticals, into building and ramping up Helios Therapeutics. The other thing that I thought I'd give as an insight in my introduction, a lot of people have been asking me about my travels, have been following what I've been up to and what Helios has been up to on LinkedIn. Travel is a big part of my life and always has been. I had a global role in a pharmaceutical company, which meant I oversaw 24 sites in 22 countries, got to see the good, the bad, and the ugly, and bring a lot of that expertise back home to New Zealand to help build a whole new industry. But the other thing in terms of traveling that I've done is I did a charity rally back in 2010 where I jumped in a car and drove from London to Ulaanbaatar in Mongolia, traveling through 24 countries, completely unsupported, raising money for children's charities. So there are a whole lot of new challenges, new countries, new cultures to explore. And I think that's a little bit like the medicinal cannabis industry around the world at the moment, and all of the cultures and challenges, and bringing all of that together as we talk about regulatory reform.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Pavel Kubu. I'm a doctor of medicine by education, specialized in medical informatics and addictology. I'm also one of the first Czech and as well European official medical cannabis patients getting the cannabis either prescribed or lately refunded. I'm actually chairing the patient association COPATS, which is Association for Medical Cannabis Patients. I also serve as an advisor to the Czech Drug Czar, as advisor for digitalization, which is becoming increasingly important, not just in seed-to sales and controlling the recreational cannabis use, but as we were speaking with my colleague Bijan earlier, it's in fact kind of underlying transformation in the medicine to be able to serve and help with healing in the aging society. And I work as a chief information officer in Chain Pharmaceuticals, where we are developing final medications based on phytocannabinoids and other interestingly bioactive natural complexes.
Yes. Yeah, I'm Tom Pettit. I run and host a cannabis business podcast, Smells Like Business. It's done from a sort of Eurocentric and entrepreneurial perspective. It started in 2020, so I've been following all the developments, especially here in Europe, and I try and get most of my guests are European guests, but I also try and get guests from the other side of the pond, from North America, to get their two cents on how the industry has developed there and what we in Europe can learn from them, what they did right, but also what they did wrong. And I think we're in a privileged position to learn and, you know, see how we can do things the European way. So fortunately, having interviewed several thought leaders and experts in the industry, I've learned a thing or two about the European market and the global market. And being an interviewer, now I'm on the other side of it and going to be asked some questions about it myself. So looking forward to it.
Can you hear me? Yeah.
Yes, now.
Yeah. So my name is Hanna Hlushenko. I'm Business Development Director of Conexport Pharma. Conexport Pharma is cannabis producer from Portugal. So basically, we were one of the first companies in Portugal who obtained license for cannabis cultivation. I'm in the industry for 5 years already, and basically my job is to understand European markets, because we mainly sell to Germany, to the UK, and to Poland. Poland, I believe, is one of the interesting markets right now. And basically my expertise is knowing and understanding different markets within Europe. I'm Ukrainian by origin, and because of this, recently Ukraine announced that they want to legalize medical cannabis, and today I'll be speaking mainly about this. Thank you.
So I wanted to kick off by asking the panel, this is open to anyone, what you think are the key driving factors behind global cannabis reform. Is it cultural? Is it a growing sense that prohibition isn't working? Is it financial? Are governments starting to, you know, come onto the fact that there's a lot of money to be made here, lots of taxes? Is it political? Is it a vote winner? Kind of seen that in Germany, or is it medical? Is it about, you know, the impact that this can have on patients' lives? What do we think? Open to anybody.
So I think actually is definitely a mixture of all of those, with of course different participations in different countries, but to not be just answering totally generally. I think at the beginning was the fact that general public as well professional public is seeing the fact that war on drugs does not work. Drugs are in fact the only commodity which is decreasing the absolute price in the actual historically high inflation. Price is the main indicators of illegal drug access. So it says that they are much more accessible than they were before the war on drugs started. Mm. And together with it, for the cannabis, there's definitely very important another, let's say, starting principle from these, which was the medical access, where all the medical cannabis programs, they are lobbied from bottom up. mm-hmm. from patients through the politicians.
Anna? To be very honest, for the last couple of years, I've been living in two countries, so Portugal and Poland, right? In both of the countries, there is market exists, right? In Portugal, they cultivate, but basically, there is no consumption internally of medical cannabis. In Poland, there is a consumption of medical cannabis, and then there is no cultivation, right? And to be very honest, when it comes to comparison of different countries, they're completely different, right? So in Portugal, cannabis is decriminalized, meaning that it's quite easy to find the cannabis on the black market. Because of this, in Portugal, people see cannabis not as such a bad thing. So basically, people do not feel that kind of cannabis is the narcotics that cause all of the problems in the universe. And because of this, right now, Portugal is one of the countries that is considered legalized on the recreational level. Why it happens? Because once again, so it's decriminalized, meaning that people are get used to the fact that it's possible that somebody smokes cannabis. Opposite example is Poland, because Poland is a very conservative country, Poland is a very religious country, and medical cannabis right now is growing mainly because market exists, because there is a possibility to get medical cannabis. Also in Poland, the CBD market started very early. So basically, Poland was one of the first countries, I guess it was 2015, when the company of CBD production started to exist. So in Poland, the fact that industry existed has driven the whole development of the market. So I personally believe it's two factors, and like two countries show completely different example. In Poland, it's development of the industry. In Portugal, it's decriminalization of the industry and kind of how people see cannabis in general. So that's my personal.
So it's market dependent. Did you want to come in?
Yeah, I will come back to the German situation because it's quite special. I mean, we also have this medical aspect. We had people with special allowances from the early 2000s. And then there were courts who said that even some people with these special allowances are allowed to grow themselves, which was a really for the responsible politicians, it was like an alarm call or something, and they said, well, we have to do this medicinal cannabis law in 2017, and of course this was one of the factors that contributed also to the reform. But I think what's more important is that we have political parties. I mean, we have the Greens that have been pro-legalization for many years, for decades, and on the other hand, we have the liberals, which are more like, you know, neoliberal, market-oriented liberals in Germany, but also decided to put legalization on their agenda more than 10 years ago now. When these two parties got together with the Social Democrats, who always had a real anti-legalization stance before in the government, and you might know that there's a lot of struggle in the German government, because particularly the liberals or the Greens are against each other in many questions, but not regarding legalization. And they have quite strong percentages of the government. And what was surprising when this legislative term started was that even the Social Democrats put their people who were clearly pro-legalization, who cared about this subject. And so we have this really, I would say, unique window of opportunity now to get this really done. And it looks like we're close to this pillar one. And I mean, in the panel before, we discussed whether pillar two will start, and we will try to contribute to that, so that this window of opportunity won't close until we have a very conservative government again, probably.
We'll come back to Germany in a second. I wanted to quickly touch on the US, given the news that has come out over the last couple of weeks regarding rescheduling. So, assuming this goes through, cannabis will no longer be classed alongside heroin and cocaine, but it will be more like codeine, very common. More to the point, it's going to open up a lot of capital, hopefully, for American players and reduce a lot of tax burdens. So, not necessarily only in the US, but what does the panel think the impact on the global cannabis industry of federal rescheduling will be? Obviously, for whatever reason, European cannabis stocks at least, but sentiment seems to be very closely tied to what's going on in the US. So I wonder, from your perspective, if this passes, what do you think the impact will be on the wider cannabis industry?
I mean, I think it opens up also the door eventually for federal legalization, which will be super interesting if that happens, because, you know, in Europe, if we really want things to move forward, the EU, it would be great if we could have some sort of EU standards. I don't see that happening for a long, long time. But now that, you know, it's been rescheduled, or if the DEA, you know, accepts it, I think the implications could potentially be huge, because not only does it open up more investment, investors feel there's less risk involved in everything, it's also less of a tax burden, right? So I think, was it Section 280E? Yeah, I think that's the one. Allows now, you know, for tax breaks and for businesses to, you know, cover some of the costs as well. So I think if that moves forward, there is definitely an opportunity. Will Europe follow? I don't know. I think you made a great example of just how the cultural nuances play a huge difference. How in Portugal, everything's decriminalized. Everyone is open to that, but there's no market. Whereas in Poland, there's a market, but a lot of Eastern Europe are still falling far behind when it comes to, you know, stigma attached.
But is that not also the case in the US, given that it's state by state at the moment? Is there anything Europe can learn from their federal regulation? You know, there's a lot of parallels between the US state by state and Europe state by state. Perhaps the Europe as a whole could learn how to regulate the block.
Definitely, if the US will finally promote what's already happening on national levels to the federal one, it will, I believe, help a lot, not just in Europe with the harmonization process, which already, you know, I am the patient coalition of International Alliance of Medical Cannabis. It's already having this as the highest priority to address the working group in European Parliament on medical cannabis. The actual just totally crazy disharmonization of cannabis access. And, you know, Czech Republic is the best example. Czechoslovakia, we've been quite a long time one country and we are still totally interconnected. But what's not just fully legal, but already refunded from healthcare insurance, is still heavily criminalized at Slovakia. It's just 400 kilometers. The nations understand each other, but the patients are given into such uncertainty. We are solving questions in the patient association of Czech medical cannabis patients. How much they are safe to travel to Slovakia for work, vacation? They've got relatives there with their medical cannabis, because they are also reading the crazy crazy cases. So back to your question. Of course, Europe, without United States, it's anything always difficult to anything change in UN. And Europe will simply not... We were hearing that a decade ago when we start lobbying for the rescheduling on United Nations. And it's simply the fact that the paradox that US that time was already accelerating the cannabis access, not just in medical, but already recreational. But federally, their diplomats were the strongest opponents because it's illegal. We are in full compliance with the conventions. And that's just the other paradox, which we learned that time. And luckily, Pavel Pachta taught us this when we were preparing some of the documents, that it's so great to see how we still believe that the UN position is going to be changed by all the increasing evidence on the medical use. And he explained us that, in fact, this is not the reason why the single conventions are staying so rigid and are so protected within UN structures, but it's because it was the only one international treaty which US and Soviet Union in the hot phase of Cold War, when in fact Cuban crisis, agreed on.
Interesting.
So no matter what's in it, it's a symbol that even such, you know, difficult situation, the leaders of the global politics can agree on something.
I want to hop back to Germany. We've dug into Germany quite a lot today, so I don't want to retread ground. I hear from a lot of businesses throughout Europe who are still looking towards Germany. They still say, you know, our government is waiting to see what happens in Germany before they go ahead with anything. Given the sort of rollback in Germany's ambitions, do you think it's time for other countries to come in and be a little bit bolder and take the lead that Germany kind of had before the rolling back? Do you think there's room for the Czech Republic, certainly, and lots of other countries to come in and be a little bit bolder now?
Well, I think most of the countries which are part of the European Union might have this problem or this, I don't know if it's really a problem, because there are also lawyers who said it isn't a problem to comply with European Union laws. But I think they always all still will have this problem. And I don't know how the discussion is like in the Czech Republic, if they also want to comply with it or if they just want to try to make full legalization possible. So I'm a little bit doubtful if this works, that some other country, perhaps Czech Republic, will take the lead in this. I would rather think that if they will do this small steps, or yeah, more or less small steps now in the German policy, it will spark also more discussion in other countries, and perhaps it will also take small steps so that we will come at one point, we will come to a change also in the European Union legislation, where it is written that cannabis should be generally should be outlawed, forbidden, and there will more and more there will be more and more exceptions for that, and perhaps then we will come to that point where they will change it, and perhaps there will even be more also conservative governments who would be okay with that.
And on to the chat. Oh, sorry, Tom, did you want to come in there?
Yeah, I also just want to say, I think Switzerland is an interesting market because obviously they're not bound by EU law, and they're obviously starting their pilot programs now in recreational cannabis, each canton taking, you know, a slightly different approach, working with the university, having a different research question. I think that's a really good approach. I think me and Karma were talking about it the other day. They're sort of doing things in their own accord, in their own little corner, slowly and discreetly. But I think there is definitely an opportunity or the potential for Switzerland to maybe, you know, be the turtle in the race against the rabbit and slowly make strides, you know, while other countries are trying to still figure out how to work under EU compliance, you know.
Well, I guess it's the other way around with Switzerland, in that Germany's probably looking towards Switzerland for Pillar 2 to see what they can learn there. Yeah. In terms of what Germany can learn, do you think there's, certainly Pillar 1 has a lot of parallels with Malta. In a webinar last week, the head of the Maltese cannabis body said that in his rollout, he admitted that Arouk should have taken a lot more time to speak to the whole ecosystem, the police, employers, things like this, rather than just the cannabis clubs. Is there any indication, to your knowledge so far, that Germany is looking at doing the same, that they're trying to get the authorities involved, or is it a bit too early to tell?
I think it's a little bit too early to tell, because I think as far as I know, from time to time, I'm in contact also with policy makers. And as far as I know, I don't know if someone even thought about this, how to include, for instance, police, because they have put out this draft law now where, for instance, it says you have to have 200 meters of distance to any schools and kindergartens to smoke in public. And no one has thought about what will the police do? Will they have some device to measure what's the distance or something? I think that's these are things that have to be discussed when the law is implemented or something. And with Pillar 2, as far as I know, there is even very, very few, there are very few considerations about how this will turn out. And so this is one other reason to put it forward. And we will hope that discussion will go on also on that part of the law.
So back to countries being a bit bolder, and to the Czech Republic. From what I've heard, at least, correct me if I'm wrong, it seems like the government is taking the position, certainly with the EC, that they're just going to do it and ask for forgiveness later rather than ask for permission.
That's nice. summary of it. Although in the political process, you have to be realistic. Uh-huh. Policy is art of possible, we were already chatting it before we started. The window of opportunity does not stay open like in Germany forever. Mm. We have to either use it or we lose it.
Yeah.
The initial discussions which were in the working group, where especially some representative of cannabis industry were coming with, and I would say even ignorance of the fact that if we will be pushing for legalization, we won't get anything. Mm. And potentially the government will break up on the topic because it's five parties, Christian Democrats up to pirates. You won't find like larger difference in the political backgrounds of the parties. And at the beginning of the process, the Christian Democrats were strongly against. Mm-hmm. As of right now, they are still strictly against, but they are saying they can imagine the self-cultivation and cannabis social clubs. Because Germany already paved the way. So, and you know, if you look to the map of Europe, we are basically surrounded by Germany anyway. So, of course, they do understand that their totally opposite position is not in their best interest. But of course, if it would be pushed to approve a full legalization, and maybe we'll go also the same way as, in fact, Germany is proposing, and Switzerland is already nicely saying how it can work even without like structural legislation changes. Yeah. So the potential retail can be happening also in a pilot setting, pilot project setting, where in fact the proposed area here in Germany is population-wise as big as Czech Republic, so we can be potentially a control group for the comparing of results of these large pilot projects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting that it's so intertwined with what Germany's doing, as you say, geographically, but also in terms of what they're doing. Another really interesting market, and perhaps an unexpected one that's come online recently, is Ukraine. 2 months ago, President Zelensky asked the Ukrainian parliament to legalize medical cannabis. Less than a month ago, the parliament voted in favor of this. Hannah, are you able to just take us through kind of what's going on?
Thank you so much. So I'm Ukrainian by my origin, and I was always, always very skeptical towards the whole idea Ukraine legalizing medical cannabis. And it's fun because everybody is discussing legalizing cannabis for recreational purpose, and Ukraine is still legalizing it for medical purpose, right? So long story short, what is happening? So first of all, there is no market in Ukraine whatsoever currently. It's possible to cultivate hemp until 0.0% THC, so even CBD is not being produced in Ukraine. So now, when this subject is being spread in media, I'm the person who is explaining what is the difference between THC and CBD, okay? But then for some reason, mainly because there is a war happening and there are a lot of requests from the military personnel, who, especially those who lost limbs, they need some pain reliefs. Mainly because of this, Zelensky said, okay, guys, let's push, let's do something. And he kind of suggested doing this, and the law was adopted in the first hearing, meaning that it's not the final kind of stage. So kind of the law is adopted only after the second hearing, after he signs the paper, but it's a big push, right? According to what is, let's say, was voted for, the situation is following. Ukraine wants to cultivate medical cannabis, so there are already a lot of different groups in Ukraine that wants to do the cultivation, which is obvious, because once the country opens the market, everybody wants to cultivate standard position. Also, there would be a hemp cultivation, according to the same as in Europe. But the main problem of this law that one, like, that is currently kind of voted for, is that it prohibits import fully. So basically, in this current law, it prohibits import until 2028. And it was done mainly because to protect domestic producer, right? But the whole idea of the law is to create the path to give product to the people who need it. And the war is happening now, not in 2028. And that's the situation. And because of this, once the law was adopted in the first hearing, a good friend of mine, he's the main lobbyist of the law, invited me as an expert to join the kind of working group with the Ministry of Health, with the state agency on medicines, to explain how to give access to the cannabis to patients now. And basically, we've been working for the last 2 months. I've been visiting Ukraine a couple of times, and I was explaining that it's possible to do the import of the product. This is the document that is needed to be supplied if the product should be kind of registered, right? And to be very honest, I feel very positive about this. Now I'm very positive about the whole possibility, because it seems that the Ministry of Health is reacting quite positively on what is suggested. They are kind of receiving with a pleasure all of the documents that I'm providing, examples of stability studies, examples of GMP certificate, GCP certificate. So it seems to me that there is a possibility that actually Ukraine will kind of legalize medical cannabis. And I think the import will happen as well. When it comes to the model, most likely, at least how I see this, if the import would be allowed, it would be similar to the Polish process. So basically, there would be a product registration, same as in Poland, not as in Germany. But I really have high hopes towards this. When it comes to the timeline, so first of all, once again, the most important is the second hearing of the law. It's been delayed because parliamentary committee has 800 suggestion of amendments. They need to process it now. They're actually doing it right now. And then most likely, if everything goes great, obviously we understand this is an optimistic scenario, the law will be adopted in October or November. So that would be the moment when the law will be adopted. Then the law comes into force in 6 months. And during this period of time, regulatory authority has a time to develop all of the regulatory documents. However, I think, so basically, I personally expect very much November, because that would be the moment when it would be viable if it actually happens or not. If it happens, then I guess the first product can appear on the market somewhere at the end of 2025, because I don't think the process, the registration process would be very long. So I think there should be a registration, but I don't think it would be long. So long story short, I'm very excited about this whole possibility. Even so, once again, I was always very skeptical about Ukraine legalizing medical cannabis, but it seems that it would happen. When it comes to how it would happen, most likely it would be a very similar model as in Poland, as in the UK. So that would be clinic who prescribe, patient get prescriptions, go to the doctor and get in the pharmacy medical cannabis. Obviously, there would be less pharmacy that able to sell cannabis, because the pharmacy needs to have narcotic permission to do so. But in general, I believe that will happen in some period of time, hopefully.
And what are the realities of, you know, getting this across the line while being at war? You know, surely it's not top of the priorities. It's difficult to trade with other countries. Supply chains are all over the place. You know, what in realistic terms, do you think that that's going to extend the timeline? Do you think it's going to offer extra roadblocks?
To be very honest, when people kind of bring their argument of doing it, so that's not time to do it, it's actually a time because we have a war. I personally participated in kind of transferring the cannabis extracts from Poland to Ukraine to the person who lost two legs. I'm sorry, but kind of it's time of course, to do this, yeah. To be very honest. But when it comes to the timelines, I don't think the process will be, I mean, like, it might be delayed for some reason due to the organizational aspects, like the 800 amendments from the people who do not want cannabis to be legal. But in general, it seems that kind of Ministry of Health is moving forward. They're really processing a lot of documents. They're having meeting from kind of every single week regarding this. So to be very honest, I don't think that the law itself would be kind of put in some shelf, top shelf, and nobody take care of it. So I, once again, I was always very skeptical towards this, but now I have really good kind of beliefs that it really would happen.
I have to say that it's great how you finish it, that you finally have the beliefs, because that's exactly what we are seeing from Czech. We were involved as Kopacz in preparing some documentations and experience sharing for that initial hearing in Ukrainian parliament. And since that, we also start to work, because at the end of the day, it's about the time, how quickly the access can start. In Czech Republic, it took 3 years when it was legalized until there was the efficient infrastructure and sub-legislative norm to get the first gram of medical cannabis to Czech patients. In Greece, as of right now, it's 4.5 years. They still did not dispense a single one. So we start to work with Czech government, which has special envoy for coordinating the help to Ukraine. And I'm glad that I can share this in fact, this week news, when we finally got a confirmation from the Czech healthcare insurance that all Ukrainian refugees in Czech Republic, because they are registered as a healthcare insurers, so they can get medical cannabis immediately refunded and prescribed. And we're gonna, as we got it officially, we're gonna communicate it officially. I know there's similar process happening in Germany, but I don't know how far it is as well, because also German patients associations were involved in sharing this experience. And what we also want to, through our governments, offer to Ukrainian government is sharing the experience. Mm. What is the most time-consuming and blocking access? In Czech, we are now, or we are consistently working on removing various barriers. Sometimes new barriers comes up with legislation which in a first look looks like positive. In Czech, it was the recent extension of licensing and import-export legislation. But new barriers turn up to be for extract. So legally, Czech patients can get extract. In reality, you can get refunded due to crazy recounting ratio, which the Czech FDA used. You can get refunded just 4.2 grams of extract per month, which is, of course, not sufficient. But back to Ukraine, we'll be happy to. And let's sync up lately, because I think that will be great that also the Ukrainian communities hear that they can get medical cannabis access as of right now in Czech Republic. Also, all the veterans which are already treated in Czech Republic are.
I didn't know it, but this is really an amazing information. I really kind of, this is the first time I hear it. But yeah, that's amazing, because the problem of veteran exists, yeah.
So another couple of markets which tend to go under the radar, certainly here in Europe, for no good reason, are New Zealand and Australia. Carmen, these are some of the newest markets in the world. Can you just walk us through how they compare to what's in the rest of the world, the US or European models?
Sure. So I think sometimes in Europe you forget about New Zealand and Australia because we are so far away. Maybe I can start with some of the things that are the same. So for us, we have a GMP certificate which is issued by our New Zealand Ministry of Health. That through the mutual recognition scheme is also EU GMP. Mm-hmm. equivalent and the same in Australia. So when we talk about harmonization of rules across the EU, I would love if they harmonize the specifications and rules across the EU. As someone who is exporting to the EU, that would make our lives down under a lot easier. In terms of something that's different, we're a relatively new market. Our medicinal scheme has been in place since October 2021, so just coming up on 2 years. We look to the rest of the world to learn what's happening, what the trends are, what we can do to really help our patients at home in New Zealand. I think one of the things that's different in terms of what happens in Australia and New Zealand compared to Europe is that in New Zealand, all cannabis is a prescription medicine, including CBD. And when I came to Europe last year and saw all the CBD available, I thought, okay, in New Zealand, we've got this wrong. It's overkill for CBD to be a prescription medicine. But actually, now as I see the patient numbers ramping up so quickly, more and more doctors prescribing, what I'm realizing is that it's been a great way of bringing doctors on the journey to feel more comfortable about cannabis as a medicine, because doctors will first prescribe maybe a CBD isolate product if they're really nervous, and they say, okay, some good results here. Let's try a CBD full spectrum medicine. Okay, that's working great. Let's add in a 10-10 extract, a balanced extract in the evening. And it actually has really normalized cannabis as a medicine without the scary THC that lots of doctors really don't feel comfortable with in the first instance. So in our market, we have both GPs prescribing and we have some clinics prescribing. But any doctor in New Zealand can prescribe medicinal cannabis for any condition, and any pharmacy can dispense. So there is no special licenses required. All those barriers have been taken away. The barrier is really around the stigma and the education. Doctors not knowing about cannabis as a medicine, and that's one of the things that we have really been driving, both through Helios Therapeutics, but also through the New Zealand Medicinal Cannabis Council.
Well, 2 years is super young. It sounds like enabling doctors to prescribe has driven a really massive growth. But surely there are growing pains in such a young market. What are some of the stumbling blocks you see ahead?
Yeah, so we still have patients that come to us saying that their doctor doesn't feel comfortable prescribing. I think that is the biggest barrier to patients. And then the other one, which won't be a surprise to anyone who works in this industry, is all around cost. So Helios has really driven access and affordability since we entered market in New Zealand, actually bringing down the cost of medicinal cannabis to patients in New Zealand by around half compared to what it was 2 years ago. And we do that every time that we're launching new products. We look at ways that we're able to do that. One of the ways that we're able to do that, and we'll be able to do more of that in the future, is that we have pushed our New Zealand government to adjust some of the rules in the medicinal cannabis scheme to make exporting easier. So everything that we export still EU GMP, but we're actually removing some of those barriers to export, which means that we're able to scale a lot quicker, which will help companies like Helios, but also some of the other smaller companies in the New Zealand market who have really struggled to get off the ground with not being able to get their products into market in New Zealand. We have some of the strictest rules in the world, I should tell you. So for some of them, they'll be able to export their products to other countries when they weren't able to get those registered in New Zealand.
So conscious of time, I'm sure there's loads of markets that are really interesting that we've missed. But to wrap up, I just wanted to ask each of you, are there any markets that we haven't mentioned that you think are really interesting that people should keep an eye on? And where are you watching very closely? Where do you think the most important developments are happening in the world? I'll start with you.
I think what's very interesting to look at is the market in Thailand, because it's so much different from most of the other legalization processes that we saw in other countries, that is seems to be completely driven by economic interests and also completely driven by getting money from tourists. Mm. As far as I got it, they sell cannabis for sometimes ridiculously high prices to tourists that no one from Thailand would afford to get it like this. And it's really it seems wild how the market develops there, and it's really interesting what will happen as a consequence of that.
Carmen?
So we were speaking before about Switzerland. Mm. Switzerland is one that I have my eye on. I think that they're doing some interesting things. Also have a personal connection, having spent 5 years of my life living in Switzerland. And then we've touched a little bit on Australia. Mm-hmm. So in Australia, the rules actually got stricter on the 1st of July. So while on this side of the world, we're talking about deregulation, in Australia, they actually increased their rules. So all imports have to be EU GMP from the 1st of July. There's also some murmurings around legislative change for recreational adult use in Australia. So I think that will be one to watch.
For me, it's all good Dutch. Thanks to the achievement they did with medical cannabis, and they proved it can be standardized as a medication in multiple variants, and it can be researched properly. The University of Leiden studies and Bedrocan sponsoring multiple others, which I do not want to forget on someone. But as we were speaking here about the push-pull energies between various countries, I must say what's now helping a lot in the country discussion in Czech is that, because the opposers, especially from Christians Democrats, were saying at the very beginning of the process, nothing like that. Even Dutch does not legalize that. Mm. So why we should be? Now they can't. Yeah. There is the pilot project for recreational use, and I would say it's one of the underlying processes why they in fact start to accept that it needs to evolve, that it cannot stay rigid.
Really interesting. Tom?
Yeah, I mean, I always like to look over to the US because, I mean, it's the country of extremes, right? So, you know, in Florida, you have forced vertical integration. In Oklahoma, you know, $2,500, anyone willy-nilly can get a license. So it's just so interesting to see how that is developing from state to state. And I think in Europe, unfortunately, it'll be a while before we have some sort of EU regulation. So I think it will be from country to country. The US tends to be a bit reactive. Let's try something, see what happens. I think Europe's a bit more proactive. We'll do the slow and steady approach. I also think the Netherlands with their recreational pilot program is really cool. I want to mention that because, you know, a selected number of coffee shops will be selling, you know, cannabis that's comes from the government, is legal alongside illicit cannabis. So I think it's a case study. It'd be interesting to see how that all unravels. So so I'm kind of keeping an eye on that development as well recreationally.
Anna?
When it comes to medical markets, I personally kind of in love with Polish markets. Polish market is growing very quickly. Mm-hmm. From 2022 to 2021, the market showed tripled. The market tripled in size. In 2023, already kind of the whole amount of 2022 already kind of amount of product was imported. So when it comes to medical market, I really like the Polish market. When it comes to the new interesting markets, to be very honest, I recently analyzed Brazil. Nobody speaks mm-hmm. about Brazil, but they have 215 million people and mm-hmm. they just starting to register CBD products, which is amazing. And also Japan when it comes to CBD, because they have started also recently importing CBD. So I believe kind of those market nobody look at, but I would kind of highly emphasize your attention to pay attention.
They've got big populations as well, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Amazing. Well, that's time. Thank you so much to everyone on the panel. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. You can find more podcasts on our channel, and we look forward to welcoming you to one of our upcoming events. All dates are available at cb-net.com.